Absolutely. And I also want to shout out to Donna.
You done you done screwed that one up. Don't try now. It don't count, brother.
You're listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin Compliance. How's it going, Donna?
We are cruising right on into the holiday season, trying to stay positive about it because I'm never a big fan of the holiday season. It's just too stressful.
Rush, 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 rush.
Yeah, I know. So I got to go here. I got to get this.
Is the stressful part the doing the things for the people that you don't want to be around the rest of the year?
I plead the fifth.
I've always thought that was funny. You know, you have those people that's like, yeah, we haven't seen each other since last Christmas, and they live 30 minutes away.
I know. It's just wrong.
It's but like you don't want to see him.
there's really no one I see during the holidays that I don't normally see, except, you know, my brother, he lives in New York, my stepbrother and his wife, they live in Charlotte, ironically. Oh. And I can't go to Charlotte because
you got kicked out.
Because you were there. So here we go, getting ready for the holidays. So that's all we can do.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, I have a restraining order against her.
That's a good one. I love it. I remember that when you want to have one.
Well, you know, those are two words you can't put with Donna's restraining and order.
I love that. And you're right.
I know. So
let's roll, brother.
All right. So before we dive into our episode, which is going to be a complete and utter Donna rant. It'll be fun.
I've had it.
But where are you going to be coming up?
Well, we are now booking 2018. And trying to get one more in February that I'm trying to get the details finalized. But we already have finalized the Georgia, South Carolina Ambulatory Surgical Center Association Joint Annual Conference and Trade Show.
Good grief.
I know. It's a lot. But they actually are having it this year in Atlanta. So it worked out really well for me, February 16th. So I'm going to be a speaker on, would you believe, HIPAA? and then we've also booked the national, hello, it's a national, not a regional.
Hmm.
It is a national conference, the JAWS Society. Dun, dun, so that's dun, dun, the dun, dun, National dun, dun, dun. Society of Oral and Maxillofacial Administrators.
Oh, shoot. I thought it was going to be like a great white shark convention or something.
But that's April 22nd through the 25th in Newport Beach. Oh. I'm going to be there.
Going to the other coast.
Yeah. And so we've got a lot to work out because... right after that, the weekend after that, is the annual Georgia MGMA conference, which we always go to, and that's in Savannah, and I don't even know what we're going to do there, but we always have a booth, but I do want to try to figure out how to do something before the JAWS conference, maybe do, if we get enough interest in that Southern California area, might be worth trying to do a seminar or something out there, don't you think, David?
Yeah. Yeah, we did have somebody recently ask if we were going to be out west somewhere. I can't remember now.
Texas. Yeah, and either one of us had time to respond because, you know, when you guys send us an email, it's the two of us figuring out who's got time to actually type something. And what should we say here? Well, we don't have any plans to be in Texas at this time.
Yeah. However, if you want to host it,
get your peeps. If you can get somebody to host us, we would love to come to your area and do a HIPAA boot camp with an organization we actually have large groups that are talking with us. So big groups that are like, come in and do it with our company. But those of you who are individuals and you're interested, let us know. And as always, you can send an email to Carla@cardoncompliance.com.
Yeah, with a K. Carla with a K.
Carla with a K. That's right. Carla. She's the car. I'm the Don.
You're the Don. You are the Don.
I'm the Don. All right. So
shout out to Rebecca Latches of Compliance Mastermind Podcast.
Yeah.
So she's a kind of a newcomer to the podcasting compliance world, I believe. And yes. So shout out to her. Congratulations. The podcast sounded great. And she put us on her list of top 12 podcasts. Maybe it's got something to do with 12 Days of Christmas. I don't know. But
that related to healthcare.
Yeah. Good list there too. So if you are in compliance and that's your thing, then put her on your list of stuff to listen to.
Yeah, she looks at the, you know, the compliance officer bigger picture, not just HIPAA. And I did enjoy that when she's talking about us, she chuckles. You can hear her just chuckling just a little bit. You know, they do exactly what they say, help you with HIPAA. So thanks for mentioning us, Rebecca. We are honored to be in that list.
Absolutely. And I also want to shout out to Donna.
You done you done screwed that one up. Don't try now. It don't count, brother.
So I was on a podcast the other week. Podnuts Pro is the name of the podcast. And it was 2 1-hour sessions where we talked about compliance and HIPAA and how it applied to IT and all that. And apparently not once did I mention Don.
Not once. 2 hours. He mentioned his podcast. He would say our podcast or on the podcast. Never did he mention me. He mentioned the company who trained him on HIPAA and the company that does the training for his HIPAA for MSPs. But did he say my name? Not once in 2 hours. For those of you who have my side and my back, send him a complaint email. Go ahead. Just right there. Just send it to david@hipaformsps.com. Just register your complaint on my behalf. Thank you.
Yeah, just put it in the title. Say my name. Say my name. That should be the title of your email.
2 hours. 2 hours. Now, I do have to say that when I was listening, I would cheer when he would get asked a question and he was ready for it. He knew it. So 2 hours of discussions on HIPAA, and he nailed almost every one of them.
Almost.
And there's just one. You started getting out of the areas where they were asking you about things that would normally fall under my purview, mm-hmm. not yours, because you always say, I do the tech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And but he did well, and I would cheer. I'd be like, I wonder how he's going to answer this. And then he would do well, and I'm like, hey, my student, the master approves of the student. But the flip side of that is not one time in 2 hours.
Well, you know what it was? I figured that of all the things for you to listen to, you would never listen to a podcast with me on. So I would be safe.
So, yeah, you just thought, you know, she's not going to listen, so I don't have to worry about
exactly
it because
right.
No one else cares besides her.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm done with you.
All right, good. So while you're on the rant path, that's a perfect segue into today's topic.
Yes. So today's topic is about what it means when somebody says, you don't have to worry about my HIPAA compliance because I have SOC 2. And, you know, they can even mention HITRUST. Now, I will say that HITRUST is a little different than SOC 2, and we'll get into that. But we're going to particularly talk about the number of times that we hear, oh, we don't have to worry about, you know, such and such, they're SOC 2 type 2. Great.
Are you being treated for that?
I know, really. Don't they have some sort of vaccination? But the bottom line is that when you bring up these kinds of well-known certifications, it kind of creates this idea that you're okay. And the problem is the devil is in the details. And the more I heard about it when I was at a HITRUST meeting a few weeks ago, And there's just this discussion from people who are responsible for doing these things. And one of the things they brought up over and over and over was that the scope of the program is what matters, because you submit for certification what you want them to evaluate, and the scope defines, here is what I want you to evaluate and the controls I have in place that meet these criteria. And that's it. Don't evaluate anything else. And there was a lot of discussion of, you would assume people would just do the right thing and say, evaluate the pertinent details, but they don't. They evaluate the things that would cover them in a nice, neat little box. And it's going on so often, I vowed to really the next, from then on, it didn't matter what it was. Now, it is a little different with high trust, because at high trust, they physically spend time in the different levels of high trust. You can have the self-assurance, you can have the desktop, and then you have the real certification. And the real certification, a lot more stringent, a lot more to do, but high trust covers multiple different regulations and all this kind of stuff. So, yes, you still need to do this process for high trust, but you're not going to find as much to worry about than what I've started noticing in evaluating these SOC 2 reports. So, turns out that most people really do narrow down that scope thing so that it works in their behalf. And it's more likely than not that that's occurring. And I'm like, I'm going to start digging through these things. That's it. I'm you know, before I would kind of review them and see what they looked at and the criteria. But now I'm going to dig down deep from this point forward. And then would you believe it? Like the next week, a SOC 2 report comes in that, hey, one of our clients has a new IT vendor they're looking at, and they ask them for the due diligence, because, you know, that's what we have our clients do. Because we want more than just you signing a piece of paper to say you're going to protect our data, particularly when you're the one that has control of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, and you and I've talked about this before. I mean, we've mentioned it on many episodes that particularly IT firms get a little arrogant that we know what we're doing and everybody else is an idiot. IT people... can be that.
Watch out now. Watch out.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. I mean,
yeah, they can be. But, you know, in their defense, it's usually because they have no complete understanding of what part of HIPAA that they actually have read and understand.
Well, and that they equate it to these other, you know, it's like if you listen to your interview on Podnuts, one of the things that kept discussing over and over, which, you know, it was a great point of how, and I'm drawing a blank on the host,
Marvin's
name. Marvin. Marvin kept bringing up, we're IT people, we want checklists. And you kept bringing up, HIPAA is not a checklist thing. You're never going to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem is not that they don't understand. The problem is they don't think they need to.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. You know, you can be really good at what you do and have a level of arrogance, and I'm fine with that, you know, if it's confidence. You know, there's confidence and then there's cocky, as we call it. And confidence is a good thing. It's a positive thing. You want that from your IT firm. You want them to believe in what they're doing. But at the same time, you also want them to say, let me make sure I know everything, not I already know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we deal with this a lot of times, but... what they did in response to the questionnaire that we send out, which asks questions like, you know, what method do you use for a risk analysis? And when was the last time you did employee training? And what did that include? And, you know, very specific things. In response, they sent their SOC 2 report with a very hoity-toity response of how this SOC 2 report basically says we're better than HIPAA.
So this questionnaire you're sending out, though, that's your business associate due diligence.
Yep.
Okay.
It's the standard one we send to everybody.
Right.
So the ones that refuse to fill it out, I mean, it shouldn't take you that long at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just go through it, answer the questions, and we're going to know. and it's automatically documented in the Comply Assistant tool that we use to do them, or there's a questionnaire you fill out and send back in. So they just sent an email to say, look, we don't need to do that questionnaire. Here's our SOC 2, and here's a copy of the training the employees had, our annual training. And here's a copy of the people who took the training that we got signatures. Right. We can prove
did
we did that.
Did you say annual training?
Yeah. So first, let's just take a quick moment to review that generic training. And remember, we're going to come back to it in a minute. Remember, recently we talked about what OCR published, and it used the word generic training when it gave them a score for their compliance effort.
Yeah, I remember that.
Effort. And a one is great, and
it's like
five is you're not even trying.
It's like golf. You want a low score on this thing.
That's right. I want a low score. And the high score is a five, which is basically you're not even making an attempt. And in number four, it uses the actual phrase, training is generic, period.
Okay.
So,
can you define generic?
So you can't get much more generic than the training that they sent us, which is done by a well-known HR payroll services national firm.
So not even a compliance company.
Right. It's through an HR firm.
Okay.
Yeah, and they sent us the PDF with all of the slides and the summary, and oh, it's a big long PDF, you know, 40 pages, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it has links to additional resources. All of those are HHS resources.
Okay.
But basically, all it is stuff you could pull right off the web that tells you what the law says.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, in the summary in our seminar, we described the laws and provisions of HIPAA and how it may affect your business. And you've identified what HIPAA is and how it protects workers. So their training is basically telling you how you are protected by HIPAA,
mm-hmm.
based on that statement, is what I think. Then it talks about Title I and Title II, which, you know, we don't even talk about Title I, because Title I is the part that's the actual HIP, the hip part, not the part. But, you know, that's where it's talking about pre-existing conditions and portability of insurance and all of these kind of things, so that you have coverage that moves from one job to another and all these kind of things. It takes them through that to talk about, you know, that section of the law. When you're an IT firm, yeah, your staff may want to know it for their own personal knowledge, but it doesn't help you support your clients under HIPAA.
Right. And if they're looking at employees, it sounds like that's training that's kind of more for like a self-insured entity or something.
Well, you know, all of us should understand our rights as patients.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's kind of the way it's teaching it, is to say, here are your rights as a patient under HIPAA.
But certainly nothing that is like, as an IT vendor, you should be doing XYZ for your clients. Or internally, for that matter. None of that.
No.
Just,
and you know, it's just a bunch of slides with a bunch of words on it.
That's what they usually are.
Yeah.
And some pictures.
It's that they have, you have to protect patient privacy, and you have to have written policies and procedures and those kind of things. And it talks about these covered entities, but it really doesn't get into talking that much about, oh, I don't know, anything pertinent you could use in your job.
So what was your response? I want to hear that part of the story.
So my clients know me, and they, as soon as they sent that over, you know, they were sending the information over for my review, because that's what we do. If there's a major vendor and they want our input, that's one of the services we provide. And so they were chuckling because they knew, but they weren't aware that the SOC 2 report had anything to do with it. They just thought that, you know, that there was going to be a rant about the training because, you know, they do training now that's completely different where people actually learn about their jobs and how HIPAA applies. And then we're more likely to actually protect patient information is kind of my theory. I don't know. But so, yeah, I did first open that up because, you know, that's the easiest way to see. Like, you know, the training is going to give you a very good indication of the tone at the top, the compliance requirements, how seriously they take it, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So I opened that up and I was like, right away, you know, my response is, I'm going to have to review the SOC 2 report, but do I have to actually tell you what I think about the training? And they're just laughing. They're like, no, we don't need to hear it, because generic training means you're barely trying. That's the bottom line. OCR stated that.
Mm-hmm.
You're one above I'm not trying at all is I'm barely trying. I'm doing very generic training and the bare minimum necessary. So that didn't speak well for the tone at the top. Let's decide. So then I pull out the SOC 2 report and I'm like, okay, let me go straight to the scope because that's the thing that I vowed I was going to dig into a lot deeper. And, you know, we definitely don't want to have any liability issues. So we're not going to say any name. But we will say it's a big tech company. It's a national tech company. They support everywhere. So, you know, it's
Geek Squad?
Yeah, there we go. I should have used that as my alias on here. But we're just going to say big tech company is the name of the company so that I don't screw up and actually say the name of the company, because I shouldn't. But I haven't given them an opportunity to respond to my thoughts. But it's not for me. You know, all I do is advise my client. Here's what I think about this. You ask what I think. I'm going to tell you what I think. It's up to them. After that, it's a business decision, and that's the way we look at everything. And if I were advising the IT company, I would tell them the exact same thing that I'm telling their client and say, it's still a business decision, and you can continue to do this. However, if I am asked to have an opinion about your services, this is what I'm going to say. I've had people, vendors, just yell at me wanting me to change my mind and understand how they're right. And I'm like, it really doesn't matter. I mean, all it is my opinion. Please calm down. I'm just saying, this is my opinion. And if my clients ask my opinion about your services, this is what I'm going to say. That's it. It's not any kind of anything else. So, it's good, one would think. And then, you know, I'm looking at the scope, and the first thing is that this national company, and they do work with partners and all of that, because, you know, sometimes you got to have somebody on boots on the ground, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of stuff. So, but their scope specifically states that it covers only their home office, nothing else. So only the services provided from their home office.
Okay.
Okay, well, you know, it could be complicated to do all your locations, and I understand that. And that was one of the things that people pointed out is often they limit the location that this certification goes with. Good. I get that. Going to remain calm. But the big thing was that there was a small statement, just small statement, that the tech company provides services to their customer. They rely on the customers to meet, and this is exactly what it's called, quote, complementary user entity controls is mentioned in the scope.
Okay.
So even in the auditor's definition and the auditor's response, the auditors mention that the controls tested, which together with the complementary user entity controls referred to in the scope paragraph of this report, if operating effectively, were those necessary to provide reasonable assurance that the applicable trust services criteria were met.
Okay.
So basically, if they're doing everything they say and the user entity controls are in place, which is part of the scope, is that the user entity controls are in place, if that's happening, they're meeting their requirements and the criteria for this certification. And for those who don't know, I need to go back. And the SOC thing is a service organization. So what is it?
Compliance.
Compliance. We'll call it that, right?
Yeah. I can look at it up right quick.
Yeah. It's the service organization controls 2, and then there's a type 1 and a type 2, and the type 2 means somebody's actually verifying you. Type 1 just means, so if somebody tells you it's type 1, first of all it is them saying, it's kind of like saying you're HIPAA certified. It's all, you know. So anyway, that is audited, and that program, the SOC program, is run by the American Association of Accounting Auditors. So it's defined by accountants, not technical people. And I will say this, HITRUST is more defined by technical people, not accountants. So again, another little thing to be aware of when you're evaluating SOC 2, accountants. Check the box. So it would be good if, you know, if you're making sure that that complementary user entity controls, if that complementary user entity control, your actual user entities fully understood that, it would work.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked my clients, do you know about these complementary user entity controls? And they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm sure I told them, go look. It's probably buried in the SLA, the service level agreement. I'm sure it's buried in there somewhere. That's the only way that they would have passed this is to say that they told the clients. And how many people read an entire service level agreement except for some of your favorite nerds? And even then, when you get it down to the people that would actually be responsible for doing this stuff, they're not the ones reading it. You know, they don't even see the service level agreement. But that's probably where it's buried. I don't know that for sure, but I have to assume it's buried somewhere. But our clients, the people that were actually responsible for interacting, the IT department that would be interacting with this big company, had no idea there were 11 complementary controls. That's right, 11.
Hmm.
So without those controls, they don't meet SOC 2. But they're not making sure that they tell you that you need to do these controls to meet SOC 2, but they tell you you don't have to worry about them because they meet SOC 2. Do you feel a loop, an infinite loop? So there's even a quote that their services are designed with the assumption that certain controls will be implemented by user entities and are called complementary user entity controls. It is not feasible for all of the trust services principles, which are the things you're supposed to check off to meet SOC 2, would be solely achieved by the big company under their controls. And it says, accordingly, user entities in conjunction with the services should establish their own internal controls or procedures to complement those of big tech company. Mm. Then in the SOC 2 report is the list.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it gets in with the client because, again, don't know. But it then says, here are the following complementary user entity controls that should be implemented in addition to the assurances that the big companies give, the tech companies giving you. And these items represent only a part of the considerations that might be pertinent at the user entity's locations and user entity's auditors. So now they're putting it off on the user entity's auditors should exercise judgment in selecting and reviewing these complementary controls.
So my compliance is dependent upon my customers.
Yeah. You know, and yes, there is a partnership. You do expect them to do certain things. Mm-hmm. You know, I was having a conversation with another IT company owner just this week, and I'm like, you need to understand they're expecting you to do things and you're expecting them to do things, but you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're working on building that definition of those boundaries for IT companies to help make sure that clients truly understand these things. And a lot of that boundary stuff that we're working on are in these 11 items. But the problem is, I'm saying I got SOC 2, you don't have to worry about me, here's these 11 things that you have to do to make my SOC 2 come to fruition. But oh, by the way, I'm not going to really make that clear. You know, it's a vicious loop. And so therein lies my issue. So when you look at the 11 controls, there's only a handful that really you wouldn't be doing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like you ensure that user IDs and passwords are assigned only to authorized individuals. Okay, well, yeah, that should be in their policies and procedures. Shouldn't be a problem. But then the next two are the ones that I'm like, I'm pretty sure the clients think you're doing this. Or they wouldn't be hiring you. But the user entities are responsible for reviewing and approving initial client network configurations and communicate discrepancies in a timely manner.
Communicate them to who?
To the big tech company in a timely manner.
Okay, so wait a minute. So the customer should be reviewing and approving network stuff and then telling the tech company about it.
They should review the initial client network configurations and communicate discrepancies.
But shouldn't that kind of be the other way around? I mean, my clients expect me to find discrepancies or problems with configurations and communicate with them for approval, not the other way around.
Yeah. I'm just saying that that's a requirement. And it seems, you know, like they could really lean on that should anything go wrong.
Right. Because then you could just say, hey, have you been reviewing the network configurations and communicating that with us?
You didn't mention that. You didn't communicate that in a timely manner in the initial client network configuration.
Ooh, okay.
And if you had, you know, then so it's not our fault. Here's the next one. They are user entities are responsible for reviewing network change email alerts for network changes and notifying the big tech company of inaccurate or unapproved alerts in a timely manner.
That's interesting.
So what?
What are the? Okay, so
network
we're gonna
change email alerts.
We're gonna charge you to manage and monitor your network, but just make sure to let us know if anything happens, so we can respond to it.
Yeah, we're going to have an alert if the network changes, and it's up to you to let us know if those are inaccurate or unapproved.
Okay. I'm following you.
Okay.
I think my clients would fire me if I told them that, but I'm following you.
All right. Then we have user entities are responsible for notifying the big tech company of network changes outside the scope of the big tech company's maintenance.
Yeah, well, yeah, that should be happening.
Yeah, that one's okay. Mm. I was fine with that. You know, it's like, but you better be clear on what the scope of your maintenance is. Because if it's not clear and you think their maintenance covers X, Y, and Z, and they say, well, no, the problem was with Z and we only cover X and Y.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't tell us about Z. Well, I thought you knew about Z. So now we're in another loop. Then we get to number 5. And this one, man. User entities are responsible for communicating known security, network, or service problems to big tech company in a timely manner. So you're saying that if I have a user that has some alert come up on their screen and they blow right by it and I don't know about it and I can't tell you about it, but that's the problem, that came in, but it came in because you did something on, say, you left a port open on the firewall, but because that employee blew by it, which we know they do, now I don't meet my responsibilities. You're still SOC 2 certified because you see what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of loopholes here.
Yeah.
User entities are responsible for reviewing and approving the monthly and quarterly reports. But there's really no requirement on what's in those monthly and quarterly reports that I could find.
Hmm.
That, you know, they have reports. Okay? Mm-hmm. Those are reports. And if we put something in there that you don't understand and it's not done in a clear, readable manner, and we slip something in there and you approve it because you don't know any better. You know, I'm just saying, there's another loophole. Now, then just some others about you got to let me know if your people change, your contact personnel. And you got to let me know, you know, who are we authorized to act if we need to escalate. Those are all good, you know, who makes decisions. love all of those, and those should be happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're responsible for physically securing your network devices at your own locations. That is true. It should be happening. But how many IT companies come in and say, we got HIPAA covered, and never mention the physical safeguards that they're not handling?
Right.
So, yes, that's true. But they, you know, is that being made clear? Hey, the security rule, everybody thinks your IT company handles the security rule, and that's not true.
Right. They're handling the technical safeguards of the security rule. Hopefully.
Maybe a little bit of the administrative stuff, but no, that's it. Just a tiny little piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the IT company doesn't understand that because they have very generic training, and your clients don't understand that because they think security means IT, you know, the patients are the ones that lose out. So then user entities are responsible for assigning user functions, creating end-user accounts, and determining password settings for client-maintained applications and infrastructure devices.
Okay.
So I get the client-maintained applications. So let's say, you know, EHR, accounting, whatever. But what I'm wondering about is the infrastructure devices.
Mm-hmm.
Is I'm going to let users create end-user accounts on my firewalls.
No.
And so I'm not really sure what that one, you know, again, loopholes and not very much clarity. Number 11, responsible users are responsible for developing their own disaster recovery and business continuity plans that address the inability to access or utilize the big tech company services. So if you can't get to us, that's your problem. However, we're not making any commitments to be available to you. I mean, it's like, and to say that the disaster recovery business continuity plans, you address your inability to access or utilize the services, what does that mean? You know, it gives you a huge gaping hole to be able to loop around and put things in. But it also shows clearly that, again, in that boundary of what do you know, what does the client think you're doing versus what are you really doing? We've talked about it multiple times. Again, the client thinks the security rule's being handled. And when they say disaster recovery, business continuity, what do the majority of people think that means?
Backup.
Exactly. I've got a backup. You know, we get that answer all the time on the BA due diligence. You know, what is your disaster recovery, business continuity plan? I got a backup.
Yeah. That's a small part of it.
Yeah, that's not business continuity at all.
Mm-mm.
You know, that's disaster recovery of the data. What machine are you going to put it on? What building are you going to put it in and be able to plug it in with power coming to it? Because that is kind of key.
Yeah.
You know?
How long are you going to be down? Kind of how long is it going to take to recover?
Right. So to just kind of throw that out there, I understand these would be in a very generic terms, not necessarily bad things. I'm not saying these are wrong flat out. If they were clarified, they are not clear. They leave a lot of big gaping holes as to how I could easily say it's your fault, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I am now basing this thing that you're going to assume I've got all all the ducks in a row. You're going to assume I'm good. And I'm basing all of that on you doing all of those things that are really not clear. So this is exactly what the conversation was about. This is not like this one company did it and no one else did it. Apparently, this is a very common problem when you dig into the details of the scope. And this is nothing but the details of the scope. So it's not the list itself, it's the lack of clarity in the list, the lack of communication of the list, the lack of clarification that, yes, we have SOC 2, but here's an element of SOC 2 that assumes you're doing these things, these clearly defined things, and make that something they understand instead of, I don't have to answer any of your questions about my ability to handle HIPAA because I have SOC 2 and generic training.
Yeah.
Now, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants says you don't have to worry about me.
Yeah, not comforting at all.
I know. I mean, think about this. Think it through. So the accountants have said this IT company is not one you have to worry about. Okay. You know, and if you go even deeper into the report itself, they list all of the controls, which is, you know, what you use to secure things. Controls are your defined methods for policies and procedures. You know, a control is antivirus. A control is securing the physical location. Those are things that you expect them to have. And they are good controls. They are not wrong. But they fill out paperwork. They write up, here are our controls. Trust us. We do this. And then send it to the accountants. The accountants do a walkthrough, and it literally at one point mentions walkthrough. And then the accountant makes a list of all those controls that were submitted, and they define which test they performed on it. So they may say they inquired. They asked the CEO if this is what you do, or they actually observe that this is taking place. Or they ask for you to re-performance. They want you to do it again. Do a little bit better job on this. And then they have inspection. An inspection, and when you look through these pages and pages of these controls that were submitted and what they essentially got their SOC 2 compliance over was inspection. I inspected the documents and the reports and the config information that you sent me. That's it. I inspected the documents. There were a couple of times where it used inquiry and a couple of times where it used observation in pages and pages and pages. And I'm talking like one or two. Everything else was I inspected the documentation you sent me.
Hmm.
I know.
But nothing about it. Just I took a look at it.
I inspected it and I approve it. You know, I inspected it to determine. And it says I inspected the items, source documents, reports, system configurations to determine performance of the specified control activity and in some instances, the timeliness of the performance of control activities. So I can show you a checklist that we completed of terminated employees. I can show you a checklist we completed of hired employees. But this does not mean that if OCR walked in the door and said, I'd like to see documentation of all the employees that you terminated in 2015 and the checklist of them, or I want to see all of the risk analysis and risk assessments you did in the last 4 years with the associated mitigation plan, could they do it? This only says for a 12-month period, you were able to supply this documentation in these 12 months. That's it.
Hmm.
Nothing else. So, when you have someone say, you don't have to worry about me because we're SOC 2, and in some of these bigger companies, you can read it and it's really, I've seen some, it's great because you know, okay, well, we're only going to cover the data center, but that's all I'm worried about is the data center. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to cover this office building we have over here. I'm going to cover the data center and the access controls to the data center. That's really my big concern. But this, to be so flippant about it, that I got a little bit more problem with.
Yep.
So there, that's what I needed to rant about.
Did you get it out?
A little bit.
You feel better. How does it make you feel?
But, you know, to me, it's, I don't know what my clients will choose to do. It's their business decision.
Mm-hmm.
But my opinion is that they should be willing to have more of a discussion instead of just blowing you off.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a lot of concern around it, for sure. And the bad thing about it is it's not just this one company. We see this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not SOC 2, it's something else, but we see this a lot.
Oh, yeah. I'm HIPAA certified.
You made me beat my head against a microphone.
You know, or we have SOC 2, and I am Health IT certified and EHR certified.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Okay, so fill out this questionnaire. You should have no problem filling this out, then.
Really, what's your problem? Just answer the question. So that's, you know, to me, I have to say, I hadn't dug into the details to that level. I had found some reports where it was really glaringly obvious that they weren't looking at what you expected them to,
mm-hmm.
but none that you had to dig, because that scope stuff, it was way down in there. You had to dig down in there to find it. Even though it was 11 items that were clearly in a list, to actually tie that to being part of the scope and what was required, it took a lot more. You couldn't just fly through it. You had to really study what things were being referenced and where.
Mm-hmm.
So, David, you going to get SOC 2 certified?
I think I will. And then I won't tell anybody anything they have to do so I can be covered. So when something happens, I'll be like, you didn't do the user control thing. It's your fault, not mine.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. Whew.
Yeah. So I hope that this will encourage others to get down in there and look at the devil in the details and read these reports better. But if not, we provide that service. But you should be doing it. Somebody needs to do it.
Well, the next time one of our mutual clients needs a due diligence done, I'm just going to send them some SOC 2 paperwork and see how long it takes the phone to ring.
You can just reply, I'm SOC 2 and I have generic training. So there you go. That's all I have to say about that for now anyway.
All right then. Very good. Well, that's our show for today, folks. I hope you enjoyed listening to Donna rant about SOC 2. Oh, so make sure that you visit us on our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Oh, and by the way, if you enjoy the show and you want to be a contributor, you can go over to helpmewithhipaa.com/give and you can show us some love there so that we can keep the lights on. Check that out. Don't forget, we have an app in the App Store. So check that out if you want to pick that up for free. So remember, for myself and Donna, because I need to shout out to Donna. HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.